We are this morning going to continue the series of lessons that we began last week, and we looked at an introductory lesson last week, and this week we're going to take a look at a couple of more feasts. This morning we're going to look at, and I apologize for my Hebrew, I don't have the Hebrew phlegmy enunciation most Jews do. I can't do it, but Hag Hamatzot, the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, is what we're going to talk about this morning. And I try to put the Hebrew names up there because I know for myself, sometimes when you're looking at a calendar, you may see Hag Hamatzot and wonder, what is that? I've never heard of that before. Well, our English Bible translates it as the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. And so we want to, again, continue the study that we began last week and look today at this Feast of the Unleavened Bread. Certainly we want to address that the Feast of the Unleavened Bread starts really with a continuation of Passover, right? It's all, and again tonight's feast as well, the Feast of the First Fruits, all of them happen within an 8-day span of one another. And in fact, this feast actually ends before the Feast of the First Fruits ends. And so this one kind of goes through 7 days, but it starts with the Passover and then continues 7 days as the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And again, if you look at Hag Matzot, the Hamatzot is the matzah that we talked about last week, the type of unleavened bread that was used in the Feast of the Passover, kind of continued that same thing throughout the week. And so this, again, you know, after, named after the bread which was eaten during the festival at that time. In Leviticus 23 and verse 6, we get, again, a little bit of the Levitical law introduction to this particular feast. Then on the 15th day of the same month, so if you remember from last week, the Passover started on the 14th day of Nisan. And so on the 15th day of Nisan, that same month, and really the very next day, there is a Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And so I hope in our study this morning we can again look at why it was instituted by God and maybe what we can learn from that particular feast that the Jews were celebrating and continue to celebrate each and every year. So let's look at the biblical account or the biblical observance of this particular feast. And again, it begins one day after Passover. It is a 7-day holiday. And because of that, because they're so connected, that most of the time it's kind of overlapped into one, you know, one feast. They don't really separate, you know, the Passover with the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. God obviously does in His explaining of it in the Levitical law. But by the time Jesus comes to earth, really they're just considered one feast. If you look at Luke chapter 22, it kind of expresses that. Luke 22 and verse 1, now the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is called the Passover, was approaching. And so they kind of combined the two, the Feast of the Unleavened Bread being, or which was called the Passover, kind of lumped it all together. In verse 7, then came the first day of unleavened bread on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. And so instead of it being 1-day feast followed by a 7-day feast, it really has become an 8-day feast. And so they kind of lump them all together. And again, we'll talk about tonight the Feast of the First Fruits being kind of stuck in the middle there on the very next day. And so we obviously understand, and the reason that we're going through this study is that all of these feasts in the Old Testament are important, right? We know they're important. God instituted them, but sometimes we read them and skim over them and we think, that was for them, right? That was for the children of Israel. That's not for us to follow. And so I don't really need to concern myself too much with that. But again, all of these feasts are pointing to something. I believe this one to be important for several reasons, right? Along with the Passover, and again, they kind of have been combined over the years, but along with the Passover, this is the first feast that God instituted. These ones were first. And again, we'll talk about another one tonight that's within that same category. Notice that it was instituted in Exodus rather than instituted in Leviticus. Again, that makes it, at least in my eyes, it makes it a little bit more special. It wasn't just a part of the Levitical law. This is something that God expected of them even before the Levitical law came. He instituted it in Exodus before they came out of Egypt. Look at Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12, starting in verse 14. It says, "Now this day will be a memorial to you, and you shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You are to celebrate it as a permanent ordinance. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, but on the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats anything leavened from the first until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day you shall have a holy assembly, and another holy assembly on the seventh day. No work at all will be done on them, except what must be eaten by every person, that alone may be prepared by you. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on it this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a permanent ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread. Until the 21st day of the month, at evening, 7 days, there shall be no leaven found in your houses. For whoever eats what is leavened, that person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is an alien or a native of the land. You shall not eat anything leavened in all your dwellings. You shall eat unleavened bread." I believe it to be important not only that it was instituted in Exodus, it didn't even wait until the Levitical law to institute it. This was instituted even before that, and as the children of Israel were kind of leaving Egypt, he said, "This is going to be an important day for you throughout your generations, no matter what." I believe it to be important because it was one of the three feasts, along with the Feast of Weeks and the Feast of Booths, that were required of the children of Israel to come back every year to the place that God would choose. And again, if you look at Deuteronomy, as Moses, again, and Deuteronomy is kind of an interesting study all of its own, but Moses, knowing that he's not going to go over into the Promised Land, is trying to get all the information that he can to the children of Israel, and he recounts a lot of the Levitical law throughout his speeches in Deuteronomy just so that the children of Israel are prepared for their life without him. He knew he was not going to be able to go over with them. He knew he was not going to be able to help them conquer that land, and so he's trying to get them ready as best he can before they go over. In Deuteronomy 16:16, he reminds them, "Three times in a year, all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Booths. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed." And so he tells them, again, or reminds them, three times a year you're going to have to go to a place which God chooses. They didn't even know the place yet, because God had not yet chosen Jerusalem as that place. And so they don't even know where they're going yet. But he said, God will choose, God will tell you where you're supposed to be, where you're supposed to go. And when he does that, you need to remember that these three times throughout the year, you're going to have to go to that place. God provides for them three rules for the feast. Right, there was going to be special sacrifices each day of the feast. So in Leviticus chapter 23, "For 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. On the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall not do any laborious work." So there was going to be a special sacrifice each day. Number two, there was going to be no work on the first and seventh days of this feast. And again, Leviticus 23, verses 7 and 8, we won't necessarily reread it, but no work on the first day of the feast or on the seventh day of the feast. And leaven is strictly forbidden throughout the time of the feast. And I just want to look at, again, Exodus chapter 12. And then look at Exodus chapter 13 and just point something out. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 15, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and when on the first day you shall remove leaven from your house. For whoever eats anything leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. He tells them to completely remove leaven from the house. Not just don't eat it, but it shouldn't even be in the house. Exodus 13 and verse 7. Unleavened bread shall be eaten throughout the 7 days, and nothing leavened shall be seen among you. Nor shall any leaven be seen among you in all your borders. Now that's removing of leaven, right? Sometimes we think, you know, Feast of the Unleavened, okay, they didn't eat leaven, right? And so they kind of, you know, try to hide it or whatever. You know, put it away. We're not going to eat leaven. No, it wasn't just that. He said, I don't want it around you. I don't want it in your house. I don't want it in your borders. You get it out. Completely remove it. I believe that to be very important. That's one of the stipulations that God... It's not just put it in a place where you'll not see it. Save it for later. Realize that they would have weeks prior to leading up to this. They would say, Feast of the Unleavened Bread's coming. We're going to have to eat this, you know, let's use it so we don't have to waste a lot of it. But they're not going to go to the store and say, well, let's go ahead and buy leaven. We're just not going to open it before the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. No, he said, I don't even want it in your borders. I don't want it in your home. Not just don't eat it. And sometimes, again, we look over it and we say, well, that's for the children of Israel. Doesn't really apply to me. I don't need to follow that. And so, okay, they didn't eat any leaven. No, it was more than that. Let's take a look at some of the modern observances. And again, to me, I think it's important because there are certain traditions that happen in the modern way that we talked about in the Passover that they don't even know how some of those things came about or how the tradition came about. It's not anything that God has told them to do. It's just something that just kind of happened over the years. And I just want to look at a couple of things and make some observations here about some of the modern observances. And again, I'll tell you that where I got this is from somebody who was a Jew, raised as a Jew, and as far as I understand, pretty strict Jew, and then converted to Christianity later and kind of wrote about two people in that situation that wrote books about it. And so that's where I get a lot of this information. So the Jews will begin, again, this process weeks in advance. Even back then and now, they will prepare for weeks in advance. Do you know that most Jews, at least these particular families, washed all of their walls to remove any trace of leaven that may be on their walls? One particular family said, I can remember every year repainting the house in the kitchen, but washing down all the walls and repainting them to remove any trace that there could possibly be any leaven left over even in the walls. He can remember repainting the kitchen each and every year. He can remember having to boil or cook cooking utensils. Boil them in water so that if they happen to have been used to have leaven and there was any trace, even though they've washed them before, they put them in big pots and boil them to burn that leaven out. In the weeks leading up to the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, they will wash their clothes with their pockets inside out in case any leaven has fallen in any of their pockets. The washing cycle will sure get them if they wash it inside out and pull the pockets out so that any trace of leaven will be gone. The houses are swept in their vacuums if they have bags. They don't empty them. They discard of them in some cases, burn them so that there is no trace of. They don't just vacuum it up and leave it in the house. It has to be removed completely from the house. The night before all of this starts, the night before Passover, they all gather around and pray and are thankful for the things that God has provided for them. I mentioned this last week, and I'll get more specific about it this week. But the father, the head of the household, will perform this search for leaven in the house. So, sorry guys, it's the father's responsibility because this was a command from God. It became the father's responsibility to make sure that there is absolutely no leaven in the house. But the interesting thing about that, and I'll just see what maybe you have to think about this. Earlier in the day, now remember, they've done all these preparations, right, leading up to this point, to get leaven completely out of the house. Earlier in the day, what mom will do is she'll go to one corner in the house, unbeknownst to dad, and drop a little bit of leaven in the corner somewhere, right? We feel like that's reverse, right? From our society where dad leaves stuff laying around and mom has to come, you know, behind him and pick everything up and clean everything up. Well, at least in this feast, sometime during that day, the night before Passover begins, mom will drop some leaven in a corner of the house somewhere for dad to find. And he'll take a wooden spoon, and again, I don't know where the tradition comes from, but he'll take a wooden spoon and a goose feather and find that leaven, wherever it may be, and sweep the leaven up into the spoon. And again, they'll place those items in a bag and wrap them up and take them outside and burn them to, again, be sure that there's no leaven in the house. Now, the books didn't mention anything about this, but a flag went up in my mind. I don't know if a flag went up in your mind, but immediately as I read it, a flag went up in my mind and thought, how often is this us? Where we are supposed to be free of leaven, but yet we spend time leaving leaven somewhere just to be cleaned up. Do you see how it maybe has become not an ordinance from God, get it out, but a ceremony in which there's a lot of ritual involved, where they're actually purposefully putting leaven in the house the night before just so that they can sweep it up? Was that God's point? Was that what God was trying to tell? It's all about the ritual. Right? It's all about making sure that there's something that the kids can see. A sweeping up. No, it's about the leaven and about getting it out of the house. But yet they've made it this ritual. And again, I don't want to put them down. What I want to ask us is, how often do we do that? Just so we have something to sweep up and burn. Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6 in the first two verses, Paul kind of addresses this to the letter to the Romans. What shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin so that grace might increase? He said, may it never be, or God forbid. How shall we who died to sin still live in it? But yet how often do we say, you know what? This is something that I enjoy. I'll ask for forgiveness later. It's just like the people that spill leaven on purpose just so that it can be cleaned up. It's just like the people that Paul was trying to address in Romans chapter 6 that say, you know what? You should sin even more, because the more you sin, the more grace you can receive from God. And Paul said, no, God forbid, may that never be. How can you who have died to sin still go on living in it? How can those who are supposed to remove leaven from their life drop leaven in a corner somewhere when it's supposed to be being removed from the house? Maybe I'm weird, but that stuck out to me like a sore thumb when I read it. Why purposefully drop something that God has told you to remove from the house completely? After you've done all of these things to repaint the walls of the kitchen, to make sure that there is no trace of leaven, why go back and make it a ceremony and drop leaven on the floor just so that it can be picked up, swept up, and burned as a show? It wasn't about the show. It has never been about the show. It is still not about the show. But how often do we as Christians, again, much like this, make it about the show of faith? And God says it's not about that. It's about doing what I've asked you to do, not making a show of it. And sometimes, again, when we come here, do we fall into that trap? Where it becomes something that it was never meant to be. He's asked us to come here and worship Him. But how often do we come and make it that observance, that show that we're here and we're sitting here and my mind can be somewhere else? I haven't removed the leaven from my life, but I've come here. And I can sweep it up here and then go back to doing what I've always done. That's not what God ever wanted. So along with that, what's the spiritual application? You know, again, all throughout Scripture, I think the connection between leaven and sin is made. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 6, and Jesus said to them, "Watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And then he says in verse 11, "How is it then that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees?" The disciples didn't even understand in this moment. Is he mad at us because we didn't bring bread? No. He says, "How do you not understand what I'm talking about? You've done this your whole life. You've celebrated this feast of unleavened bread, and God asked you, our Father asked you to get it out during this period of time. You understand the connection, right, between leaven and sin? How do you not get it? How do you not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees?" How you can let that leaven sprinkle just a little bit of it. Get on you, sprinkle on you, and it's going to spread throughout the whole community of you, throughout you yourself. How do you not see it? In Galatians chapter 5 and verse 9, again, Paul trying to explain to the Galatians, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Right? A little sin, just a little bit that's let go. It's going to spread throughout the house. And so again, why are we continuing to drop leaven to be picked up when God says, just remove it from you? Don't make a show about it. Get it out of your life. Well, what does this feast to us, what does it represent? Well, again, I think we can combine a little bit the Passover, you know, with Christ and Him being our Passover, as we talked about it, representing Jesus' sacrifice for us. To me, and again, this is just me, the unleavened bread can represent to us His burial, or maybe this period of cleansing that He does for us. Look at Psalm 16. Psalm 16 and verse 10. Again, the psalmist foreshadowing Jesus said, "For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One to undergo decay." See, God as our Passover, Jesus as our Passover, and Jesus as our unleavened bread does not allow us to see corruption, to suffer corruption. And again, when Christ was in the grave, he did not see corruption, he did not suffer corruption. It was that period of cleansing, of purifying, of getting that leaven out, so that he could come, and as we'll talk about tonight, be the first fruits for us. He purified us in his death. In Psalm, the 103rd Psalm, in verse 12, we read, "As far as the east is from the west, so far he has removed our transgressions from us." Again, I think the circumference of the earth is something like 25,000 miles. And so, really, the furthest point that you can get from one place to another before you start heading back the other direction is about 12,500. Mathematicians, you can correct me on all that later if you want, or people that teach science, if I'm off on those numbers. But the point is, it's a really far way apart. But how often, how much time do we spend heading back toward those sins? Even though he's removed them from us, as far as the east is from the west, the two have nothing to do with each other, right? As far as the east is from the west, he says, so far I've removed your transgressions from you. But how much time do we spend heading back that direction after God has sent his son to purify us from our sins? Hebrews 9 and 26. We're told again of Jesus, otherwise he would have needed to suffer often since the foundation of the world. But now, once, at the consummation of the ages, he has been manifested to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. He's cleansing us, right? He's purifying us. It's that leaven that's been taken out, that sin that's been taken out. He's done that for us. And how often do we continually lay that sin down, lay that leaven down, so that he has to clean it up over and over and over again? "And inasmuch as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment, so Christ also, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time for salvation, without reference to sin, to those who eagerly await him." He purified us in his death. And so now what it comes to us is that we need to live that feast. We need to live the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. And again, please do not get me wrong. I am not saying that we need to go back and start celebrating these feasts. But when we read about these feasts, don't skim over it. Don't just go over it and say, well, this is not for me, that was for them. No, it has meaning for you. Because it was all, as we talked about in the introduction, all of it was pointing to Christ. God was trying to point everything and lead everything to him, even for the Jews and for us to have later. Yes, they were meant to follow all of these things, but that doesn't mean we can't get meaning out of it. And again, I believe this to be Paul's message in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, starting in verse 6, says, "Your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough? Clean out the old leaven so that you may be a new lump, just as you are, in fact, unleavened. For Christ, our Passover, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us celebrate the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." I think that's the message that Paul is trying to drive home here. You can make the connection, right, guys? Clean out the old leaven so that you may be a new lump, just as in fact you are, in fact, unleavened. Why? Because Christ, our Passover, died because of that. To cleanse you from that leaven, let us therefore celebrate the feast. You know that same feast that we celebrated over and over and over, year after year after year? The Feast of the Unleavened Bread, where we painstakingly went through the house to make sure there was absolutely no leaven in it. Do you remember doing that? That's what Paul is asking them. Don't you remember? At least his Jewish Christian friends. Celebrate the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, a new type of leaven, He said, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And again, he seems kind of shocked, right? That they've kept it. They've kept that old leaven. He said, get rid of it. It's gone. Celebrate the feast. Be the feast. Live the feast of unleavened bread. Don't let any leaven in your life. And again, I believe that's the connection that Paul is trying to make and that God is trying to make for us between the feast that he talks about and our own Christian lives, pointing at his son. Again, it is easy for us to understand when we partake of the Lord's Supper, at least the unleavened bread part of it, and what it represents. That Christ died for us, to cleanse us, and he was buried. 3 days he stayed in the grave so that he could purify us or cleanse us from our sins. And again, we look at the Feast of the Unleavened Bread and we understand where Jesus was and the meal that he was eating the night in which he was betrayed. And we understand that there was no leaven there. And again, as a side note, is one of the reasons that we talk about, you know, this, some people will put, you know, fermented wine or fruit of the vine. And with leaven being a part of that process of fermentation and all of those things, we see the lengths that they went to get leaven out of the house. It wasn't there. It wasn't meant to be there. It's not meant to be in our lives. We need to remove it from us and live the feast. And again, as always, what about us? Right? One of the things that they would do in prior to being able to switch on a light, right, is they would take a candle and search every corner of the house. And again, I assume that this is probably where the more modern thing comes from, because they would take this light, right, and search the house in all of the corners that were dark and deep in the house that maybe you didn't always look at. Well, during this time, they would take those lights and search into the deepest, darkest corner where you normally couldn't, even sometimes during the daylight, because of shadows and all of the things, you can't look into that corner. During this feast or in preparation of it, they would take a lamp and look in those corners to make sure that everything that they had as far as leaven was concerned was removed. Every corner was scrutinized in the light. You see the point? How often do we do that with our own lives? Take the light that God has given us as a lamp unto our feet and a light for our path, and look into the deepest, darkest corners of your own life and say, where is that leaven? Now get it out. Be sure that that leaven is purged out of our own lives. Obviously, this concludes the second feast. And we'll, again, begin with the third one tonight. Obviously, there's so much more. There's more about the modern observance of it and some of the interesting things that go on. There's more that we could say about the biblical observance, more that we could say about our application in our own lives. But I believe this to be sufficient this morning. Christ is our Passover, but he is also our unleavened bread. He is also that purification for us. And his offers to us still stands today. That he can purify us. If we're not a child of God, we can become one through baptism into Jesus Christ for the remission of our sins. That offer still stands. He can purify us. If there is, as Christians, if we scrutinize with the light and we find that leaven in our own lives, Jesus can still purify us of that leaven. We can't get it out on our own. We have to have him remove it for us. But guess what? He's willing to do that. Have you taken advantage of it today? Will you take advantage of it today? If you're here and subject to God's invitation in any way, please come to the front seat while we stand and while we sing.